Good morning. What I would like for you to do is with the people around you, share something that happened in your life this past week. Share with the people around you something that happened in your life this past week. It could be completely uneventful. It could have been something horrible, boring, whatever. It doesn't have to be anything big or grandiose or exciting. Just something that happened in your life this past week. Go ahead and take some time to do that. Okay, so would there be anyone that would be willing to share with the group what you shared with those around you, like something that happened to you in your life this past week? Anyone? Could be completely uneventful or eventful. Anybody? Yes. Will put together a brand new pantry for his mother-in-law this week. He gets son-in-law awards, right? Awesome. That's good. I have a pantry that needs work too, Will. I'm not your mother-in-law, but am I a friend? That's great. Awesome. It's good. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Somebody else. It's good. What else? Something. Yes. Six eggs for dinner. Scrambled. That's good. That's awesome. Thank you, James. Good to have you here, man. It's sweet. It's good. Anybody else? Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I heard somebody. Yeah. Somebody else? Will, go. Cool. That's awesome. That's good. Got to go fishing with a new friend who's also here today, so that's awesome. It's good. Anybody else? Something exciting? Yes, Chris. Awesome. That's good. Everything, yes. Did you ride any like spinny rides, like the Tilt-A-Whirl, or? Don't ask me to share my Tilt-A-Whirl story. That's for another time. Moving on, right? So, is there anyone here that can quote John 14:6, the verse John 14:6? Anybody know that one by heart? You may not know the reference, but you probably have heard it, maybe. Anybody know it? John 14:6. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father but through me, right? Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the word there for life means like vigorous, active living. Like the absolute fullness of life is what Jesus is saying. I am the life. Do you believe that? I mean, do you really, really believe that? Because if you do, and you're here and you're a follower of Jesus, you would call yourself a Christian. If you really believe that Jesus is the life, and you already then have the life if you have Jesus, then why on earth are you still trying to find it? If Jesus is the life, and you have Jesus, that means then you have the life, then why are you still trying to find it? And the word life, for the kids who are here and older big kids who are here, the special Bible word for the day is the word life. And so if you are a kid and you want to really focus in and pay attention on what we're talking about this morning, every time you hear the word life, keep a tally of how many times you hear the word life or see the word life in the Bible as we read today. And then after the gathering this morning, come up to me, tell me how many times you heard or saw the word life, and you can get a prize from the prize box. If you'd rather draw a picture, you can do that. And this is for kids and adults as well. Just the kids are the ones who end up with the prizes, all right? If that helps you pay attention, sorry, Will. So the special Bible word is the word life. We're going to continue through our study in the book of Ecclesiastes. 2 weeks ago, we started and jumped into chapter 1. Today, we're going to jump into chapter 2. Ecclesiastes, as someone described it, pastor described it, is really an amazing book, and he describes it this way. Ecclesiastes shows us where our joy is ultimately found and all the places where it isn't. I love that description of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes shows us where our joy is ultimately found in all the places where it isn't. So when you or someone you know is struggling with the meaning of life, right? Or you're struggling to find joy, or you find yourself falling back into that trap of looking for life when you already have it in Jesus, Ecclesiastes is a really good place to turn. It's really a scrapbook, as we'll review here. It's really a scrapbook of a king's life. Many believe it's King Solomon, where he's looking back on his life and he's giving personal testimony of how he lived his life searching for meaning, searching for happiness, searching for joy, and he tried everything without God. And at the end of his life, he says, I tried it all, and I can tell you from personal testimony, it's just all going to leave you empty. It just leaves you empty. It's all just like grabbing smoke. The moment you think you've got it, you open your hand and you just realize you've got nothing. It just leaves you empty. And so this book is really his personal testimony of his journey, his search for meaning. And as I said, it's really him, his memoirs, explaining to us and giving you and me a warning to say, hey, listen, if you're going to try to find meaning in anything under the sun, you're going to end up empty. And so really, Ecclesiastes is an amazing book. It's God answering the question, what is the meaning of life, by this king sharing his own personal search and testimony. And so really, as we've talked, Ecclesiastes is really a call for us to not look around for meaning, but to look up and to look beyond the sun to the creator of it, to the Son, S-O-N, to Jesus. And so this morning, as we dive into Ecclesiastes chapter 2, the writer is really going to expose for us and reveal for us the emptiness of things like pleasure, possessions, having a full pocketbook, pursuits, performance, all these different things. And so that's what he's going to share with us this morning. So we're just going to read some verses, talk about them a little bit, read some more verses and talk about them. So chapter 2, verse 1, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. So he starts out and he says, listen, I'm going to try everything I can to see what satisfies you, heart. And we're going to try pleasure. We're going to try enjoyment. And he's going to then describe his journey of all the different things that he tries throughout the rest of chapter 2. But he kind of gives us this summary statement, and he says, this is what I said. He said, I'm going to try it all, but I can tell you the end already. And he says, what I discovered is that, behold, this also was vanity. It's just smoke. It's just going to leave you empty, is what he says. It's kind of like, if I could use this, all right, you have this sifter, right? And imagine that this is your heart, okay? And what he's going to do, and this, he's going to put all kinds of things in here. I'm going to set this down. All right, he's going to pour all kinds of things in his heart to see if there's anything that sticks, right? All right, so we'll come back. I need a bigger sifter. Just go with me on the illustration, all right? All right, so just imagine everything falls through, okay? Just go with me on this, all right? He's going to try all these different things. And let's just keep going. I did try it at home and it worked. All right, so here's a summary statement, right? I'm going to try all these different things, but I can tell you in the end already, it's just going to leave you grabbing smoke empty. And so what are some of the things that he tests, he tries? He says, verse 2, I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. So he's here in verses 2 and 3, he's giving us the emptiness of pleasure. The emptiness of pleasure. He says, I tried laughter. I tried pleasure. What use is it? I tried alcohol, wine, everything. And it's not like, and he says, my heart's still guiding me with wisdom. It's not like he lost total control here and got wasted. He's like, no, I was intentionally trying these things to see if it would stick, if there'd be something that would fill my heart. This is probably the guy that went from party to party to party, right, having fun, seeking fun, trying to fill his own heart, and all this. Would this stick? Tried alcohol, all these different things to satisfy his heart longing for meaning, and all it did was it just kept falling through. And he's showing us and he's reminding us the emptiness of pleasure. So this is a guy that enjoyed the party scene for a while, right? But at the end of his life, he looks back, he says, it didn't do me any good. It just left my heart wanting more. And then he goes on in verse 4, he says, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. Here he's saying, I had it all. I had possessions. And he's showing not only did he have the pleasure, he had possessions. And he's saying that this too is vanity. I mean, look at what he had. He built himself houses. He had pools in his backyard. He had vineyards. He made for himself gardens and parks and fruit trees. And if this is Solomon, if you go to 1 Kings, I believe it's chapter 9, it tells us that Solomon built himself a fleet of ships. Anyone here build yourself a fleet of ships? This guy did. I mean, he had it all. This is a guy that had the yachts. He had the vacations. He had everything you could imagine as far as possessions is concerned. And he says, if you go back up to verse 1, but behold, this also was vanity. And I wonder, is this you? Is this someone you know? Someone you know that's trying to, let's try this again. But what he is saying, if you're looking for that to fill your heart, that longing, it's just going to leave you empty. It's just going to leave you empty. Whatever pleasure, whatever possession. And then he goes on in verse 8, he says, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. This is the emptiness of your pocketbook. Some of us are like, yes, my pocketbook is empty. But he's saying the emptiness of having a full pocketbook. Right? Because you're like, he's saying, listen, I had it all. I had wealth. I had riches. This guy is filthy rich. I gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings. He had enough to where he could hire live bands playing throughout his palace. I mean, he had everything. And he says, it just left me empty. And maybe this is you. You think, man, if I could just have this much in my pocketbook, if I could just get this amount in our retirement, then I'll be content. And then you get it and you're like, maybe a little more. Maybe just a little more. And he's saying, listen, it's just going to leave you empty. And he says, listen, the emptiness of sexual relationships, many concubines, the delight of the sons of men, this guy had it all. That's what he's saying. He's like, I had sex whenever I wanted with whoever I wanted. And if this is Solomon, with princesses, 1 Kings tells us. And he says, it's just going to leave you empty. You think it will give you what your heart is longing for, but he tells you, listen, you're going to wake up, and a few days later, it's only going to leave you with guilt and shame, searching for more. The emptiness of pleasure, the emptiness of possessions, the emptiness of having a full pocketbook, right? And then he gives this realization in verses 9 through 11. So I became great. I was number one on TikTok. I had all the most followers, whatever. I surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And he's saying that, I think when he's saying these things, I was purposeful in these things. Like, I was intentionally trying to do these things to fill my heart. Like, I was really seeking. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun, he says. So he comes to this reality, he's like, listen, I had it all. I spared no expense. Whatever my heart wanted, whatever my eyes wanted, I got it. If it felt good, I did it. If I wanted it, I got it. And I can tell you at the end of it, it just left me empty. He lived by the mantra, if it feels good, do it. This is where you end up, he says. Striving after wind. Empty. There's nothing to be gained under the sun. Let me just say something here to parents, aunts, uncles. What are we communicating to our children about what matters in life? What are you communicating? Jesus? Are we communicating possessions, pleasures, pocketbook? Maybe some of us need to say no to more things so we can say yes to more God things. Just something to consider. Because at the end of life, what are your kids going to be thinking? I had it all. And I'm still empty. I did all the fun stuff. But no one told me about Jesus. And then he goes on. So he says the emptiness of possessions, of pleasure, of full pocketbook. And he goes on and he shows us now the emptiness of pursuing good. Verse 12, so I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what's already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and is striving after wind. So pleasure didn't satisfy his heart, possessions, having a full pocketbook. So he's like, let me just pursue light. Let me just pursue doing good, doing the right thing. It's wisdom, right? Wisdom is doing the right thing that you know to do. And so that's what he's pursuing. But it hits him. What's the end result of the person that all they focus on and all they want to do in life is just do the right thing? Death. He's like, I'm going to end up the same way the person who lived for evil does. And so what's the point? Now, he's not saying don't pursue good. He's saying, but if that's what you think is just doing and helping people all the time, which that's a good thing to do. But he's saying, if that's what you think is going to satisfy the longing of your heart, it won't. It's just going to leave you empty. And doing good is right and good. In the book of Galatians, Paul wrote, listen, whenever you have an opportunity to do good, do it. But this guy's saying, that's good. But if that's what you think is going to satisfy the longing in your heart, you'll be sadly mistaken. Jesus told the story of two brothers, two sons. Think of the prodigal son. If you know that story, you had the one son who went and lived for selfish pleasure. And he finds himself empty. But then you have the older son, the older brother, right? He always did the right thing. And he still ends up jealous. And so some of us, we can completely understand what he's talking about here, because maybe some in the room, you pursued this selfish pleasure and you know that it only has left you empty. But others of us, and this is probably where I lean more, would be on that self-righteous performance. We think that just being perfect and doing good and trying to do that thing, that will satisfy my heart. The reality is it won't, because it never satisfies. You're always feeling like you got to do more. It's like it just keeps falling through, whether it's selfish pleasure or self-righteous performance. It just keeps going through your heart. Nothing sticks. And again, hear me. He's not saying, I don't think he's communicating doing good is bad. That's not what he's saying, but he's saying, listen, if you think being all your performing and accomplishments, and that's going to satisfy the longing of your heart, it won't. You're just being an older brother in the story. And then he goes on. And he shows the emptiness of pursuing good. Then he shows us the emptiness of performance, even in work. Verse 18, he says, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun. Verse 18, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not work for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the work and toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. So he looks back over his life and he looks at all his hard work and he says, here's the reality of it. I'm going to work all these days and not even be able to enjoy it. Someone else is going to benefit from all the hard work I did. Someone else. And he's like, what gives? And if this is Solomon, that's exactly what happened to him. His son, Rehoboam, becomes king, and Rehoboam allows the king of Egypt to come up and steal and take all of Solomon's treasure. 1 Kings 14. So if this is Solomon, this is exactly what happened to him. He knows from personal experience. He's like, I worked so hard for this, and then someone else gets to enjoy it. He's like, where's the life in that? And again, I don't think he's saying working is bad or evil. It's not, because God gave work before sin came into the world. God gave Adam and Eve a job, and he said, I want you to go work in the garden. So your work, your job is not evil, even though it may feel like it at times, right? It's not evil. The reason why it's hard is because of sin. Don't blame God for how difficult work is. Sin is the reason why work is difficult. But he is saying, if you're only looking to your work or your performance in work to satisfy the longing of your heart, again, it's just going to go through. It's not going to stick. Well, what's his problem? What's the guy's problem? Right? We talked a couple weeks ago. He's like Eeyore. He's just so depressing. Well, his problem is where he's looking. He's telling us, I was looking in the wrong place for meaning. He tells us where he was looking. He was looking only under the sun. Verse 3. He says, I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven, he says. And then verse 11. He says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained where? Under the sun. And then verse 17, he says, I hated life because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and is striving after wind. Verse 18, I hated all my toil in which I toiled where? Under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Verse 19, yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom where? Under the sun. Verse 20. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. And then verse 22. What is man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils where? Beneath the sun. He is only looking for meaning under the sun. And that's his problem. And the writer of Ecclesiastes is calling us, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, he's calling, stop trying to fill your heart with things under the sun. Look beyond it. Look past the sun to the creator of it. How do we know this? Well, that's what he says at the end of the book, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. He says this, remember your creator, verse 1. Fear God and keep his commandments. He's saying, no, if all you're doing is looking to fill your heart with things under the sun, it's just going to go through. You have to look beyond it. You have to look to the creator, to the one who made your heart. And I think it's safe to say, listen, that everyone here this morning knows what this guy is talking about. You either know it personally or you know someone who's experienced this personally. You've experienced it either because you yourself have experienced the selfish pleasures or the self-righteous performance, and it just never satisfies. So we know, and I think the writer is warning us that how the belief that doing whatever makes you feel good or gives you the best version of yourself is a lie. And he's like, take my word for it. He's like, I had it all. And it's all vanity. It's smoke. It never filled my heart. And if I think he were here and he were to look at our culture, I think he would say something like this. Listen, whether it's changing your gender or changing your job, it's not going to give you the life your heart is searching for. It's just going to end in smoke. Because those things are incapable of giving you the life your heart was made for. They're incapable. You're like, man, this is depressing. Yeah, it is. If all we're doing is looking under the sun, so what do you do? What's the solution? I think he gives us a glimpse at the end of the chapter, verses 24 through 26. He says, there's nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. Now, that sounds contradictory. When I was reading this first, I'm like, whoa, hold up, man. You just said that stuff left you empty. What gives? Now you're saying we should go pursue this? But there's a change here. Look what he says. This also I saw is where? From the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and is striving after wind. So what's he saying here? I think the Bible teacher Warren Wiersbe helps us understand this. I think Warren Wiersbe said it well. He said, Solomon is not advocating eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's the philosophy of fatalism, not faith. Rather, he is saying, thank God for what you do have and enjoy it to the glory of God. He's saying, remember your creator. Remember that everything, the life you have now is a gift from God. It's a gift. Everything that you have right now, you don't have to go get more to have life if you have Jesus. And I think that's the point. He's like, everything that you have right now is a gift. Your job is a gift. Your marriage is a gift. The money you do have in the bank is a gift. Your singleness is a gift. Your church family is a gift. It's all a gift from the hand of God. Jeremiah Burroughs, who wrote a great book, highly recommended, The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment, wrote this back in the 1600s, mind you, says this, if you look for contentment in the creature, you will fail. No, contentment is higher, he says. And I think that's exactly what the writer of Ecclesiastes is wanting to tell us. Look beyond the sun, look higher. Look to the Esso and the Son. Look to Jesus. Why? Because Jesus is the way. Jesus is the truth. Jesus is what? The life. All right? Jesus is the life. I know this is not going to fall through. Right? Thankfully. He's the life. It's why he came. It's why he died on a cross. It's why his blood was poured out. It's why he defeated death 3 days later to give you the life, to give you him. And if you have Jesus, then you already have the life. So it begs the question, if you have Jesus, you have the life. So then why on earth are you still trying to find it? Why am I? The Apostle John wrote this in 1 John 5:12. He says, the one who has the Son has what? Life. So, I'm studying this week, and I'm running in my neighborhood, slow run, jog, if you want to call it that even. And I'm thinking through this, and I'm like, man, and I'm just talking to the Lord. I'm like, Jesus, that's so good. This truth is so good. Man, I have you. I already have the life. And in that moment, there, I just felt this great rest and peace and contentment. The weight, what? I don't have to have another dollar in my bank account. I don't have to have another like on a post. I don't have to have anything. I have the life because I have Jesus. And Jesus gave his life, his own life, to give me his. Man, there's so much peace. There's so much joy. There's so much contentment in this. And for those of us who follow Jesus, this is good news. Because if you have Jesus, you already have the life. There's so much peace. There's so much rest. There's so much contentment. And if you're here and you're not yet a follower of Jesus, what are you waiting for? Would you just acknowledge your sinfulness to Jesus and believe that he died on that cross to give you new life, his life? And then he promises that when you surrender your life to him, he will forgive you of all your sins and wipe away all that shame and all that guilt from that life trying to fill your heart. It's gone, wiped away. He makes you new, washes you clean. And that can be your story if you'll surrender to him. And ask the band to come. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to be thinking right now about this question. Is there a pleasure? Is there a possession? Is there a pursuit? Is there a certain amount in your pocketbook that you've been trusting or looking for to satisfy your heart instead of Jesus? So here's what I want you. I just want you right where you sit to just kind of bow your head, close your eyes, and just talk to the Lord. Ask the Spirit, Holy Spirit, bring this to my mind right now. What is it that I am looking to other than Jesus to fill my heart? And whatever comes to your mind, you confess that to the Lord this morning, right where you sit. Apologize for your idolatry. And then once again, thank him for his forgiveness and the life that he's given you in him. Can I be honest with you this morning? Sometime this week, there's going to be that temptation to fall back into the trap to where your heart's going to be looking for life in some form, whether it be in a pleasure, a possession, something from your pocketbook, a person, whatever it might be. And I get that. And so can I give you something to do when those thoughts, that search for life begins to like walk through the hallway of your thoughts and minds? I want to challenge you to memorize 1 John 5, 11, and 12. I want to challenge you to memorize that because this is what it says. It says, and this is the testimony that God gave us eternal life, and this life is in his Son. Whoever has the Son has life. Whoever does not have the Son of God does not have life. So when those thoughts start creeping through the hallways of your mind immediately goes, wait a second. I got Jesus. Jesus is the life. I don't need this or that. I have the life already because I have Jesus. And in that moment, just talk to him. And thank him for the life he has given you in him. As we sing, I want to open up the opportunity for you to pray. Maybe you need prayer this morning, so I'm going to ask our house church pastors, wise men, stand off to the side. If you need to pray with someone, please, we're here to pray with you. But maybe there's someone here this morning where you're like, there's someone in my life that they need this truth. And maybe you want to pray for them. I also want to encourage you to take time to pray for that person in your life. You know they're searching for meaning, they're searching for joy, and all kinds of things are trying to fill their heart with anything and everything other than Jesus. Would you pray for them? Or maybe you're here, and today is the day you want to surrender your life to Jesus and receive his life. Would you do that this morning? Right where you sit, just call on him. Let's stand together, and let's sing. If you need prayer, come and pray with us.